Welcome to the first episode of The Strangest Cars I've Raced, the new feature on the Marshall Pruitt podcast. We're kicking this off with my friend David Hobbs, talking about the 1972 Lola T310 Can-Am car. This was Lola's hope, facing Roger Penske, Mark Donohue, and the all-conquering Porsche 917, turbocharged madness in Can-Am. How well did this Lola T310 perform? I'll save that for David, but if you've heard him speak about the vehicle, we would be safe in saying that glowing terms have never been applied to his recollection of this vehicle. In our Strangest Cars debut, David also mentions two other vehicles that stand out for him from his long, long CV, that being the Joe Huffaker-built MG Liquid Suspension Special IndyCar, which, as he mentions, might have been suited for one application, but certainly not when he was asked to drive it. And he also throws in a very brief mention of the Ferguson four-wheel drive Formula One car. You can get every episode of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast on iTunes, on Podbean, on a Marshall Pruitt Podcast Facebook page, which I urge you to join, and also on marshallpruitt.com. All right, off we go with David Hobbs, 1972, Lola T310, and his personal season of misery.
Well, the Lola T310.
Yeah, I was gonna ask if that was it, because I'm struggling to recall positive reflections by David Hobbs on that Can-Am car.
Well, struggle no more, because there aren't any. So,
what didn't it do that it should have, David? Because
didn't do anything. It should have had a lot of downforce. It was low, sleek, and wide, and didn't have much downforce. It should have gone very, very fast, because it had a low frontal area, and it didn't go any faster than anything else. Just generally speaking, it was very unpleasant car to drive, and for some reason or other, when it first came out, the steering geometry was such that, I mean, you could literally hardly turn the wheel. I mean, and I drove out of pit lane at Atlanta for the first time on Saturday morning at the Road Atlanta race. I thought there was something, you know, desperately wrong with it. I mean, I staggered round for the lap and came in and said, there's something wrong with the steering. Eric Broadley had been a bit unwise in not letting me drive the car in England. I mean, we went to a test the Tuesday of that week at Silverstone, and Frank Gardner drove it all the time, and I'm sitting there in the pit lane waiting to drive this car, which I'm about to race that coming weekend, and that we're talking about Tuesday.
Yeah.
And Frank never got out of the seat, and Eric said, well, Frank's such a good tester, and as Frank finally got out of the car at 5 o'clock, when the checkered flag was out and the track was closed, he said, the steering's a bit heavy, mate. He said, but you'll probably get used to it. He was right. I mean, we gradually got out better over the year, but, you know, I mean, Eric, every race we came to, Eric came with a, in those days, you could take metal on aeroplanes, and he had a, you know, his carry-on was absolutely full of A-arms and wishbones and top links and pickup points. And, oh, fuck, I mean, it was unbelievable.
And from a strangeness standpoint, David, I'm guessing that this car might resonate with you from the fact that looking at it, I mean, I've seen the car recently fully rebuilt and for sale, and it looks like a beast. It looks like it should destroy the earth. So I'm guessing part of the strangeness was you look at the thing and say, wow, what a creature to behold. And then you climb in and say, wait a minute. How did you miss everything?
Well, we did miss everything. And of course, you know, when we were testing it at Silverstone on the Tuesday, I mean, Frank was running like 4 or 5 seconds a lap slower than the McLarens had been before they'd packed theirs up in the crate and sent them to America about 6 weeks before. Because Atlanta, we'd already missed one race. You know, and the first time I drove it in anger was on the Saturday practice. And then, of course, towards the end, because in those days, practice, there was no qualifying. It was all practice and qualifying. And by the time I got around to driving in the afternoon, you know, it was down the wire. Eric said, yeah, you better get your foot in here, because, you know, this is qualifying. Now we got to get... And, of course, the first time I went through the dip, you know, which they used to have, you remember the dip?
Oh, yeah.
I went through there flat out for the first time, and of course it was doing about 190 pipe, you know, there, and the bottom link broke, and the right rear wheel was attached at the top, and at the back of the AR, it wasn't an AR, it was a parallel link, and the front parallel link came off.
Jesus.
And so the wheel was flapping about like a supermarket wheel.
At the dip of all places.
And I mean, I went round and round and round, starting, like I said, 190 mile an hour. You know, I hit the bottom of the bump, you know, boom, and then all hell broke loose. And it went round and round and round and round. I never left the pavement. I stopped under the bridge. So I got out and bowed to the crowd.
Crossed yourself, prayed, participated in the Santeria ritual.
Because I'd been hearing this kiss, kiss, kiss. You know, which you know when you hear when you listen on boards, you know, on any of the cars, the Ferraris or the Mercedes, you can hear the plane going
kissing the ground.
Time.
Yeah, yeah.
Which it's supposed to, but I could hear it going every now and then when I went over bumps. You know, I came in and Davey Evans, who was young kid at the time, lovely boy, and of course he was murdered, like, what, 5 years ago, 6 years ago?
Jeez.
In a bar in Indianapolis. And he went on to work for Carl, this was with Carl Hart, he went on to work for Carl Haas, well, that was when I was driving, probably 72, and Davey was murdered in about 2002 or 3, and he'd been working for him the whole time. Anyway, Davey looks under the car and says, "No, mate, no, everything's all right, nothing's
famous last words.
Nothing's catching, everything's fine. Everything's fine under here, mate." Oh, okay. So off I went, first time through there, boom, round it went. And of course, the real irritating thing was that Vollmer was driving Penske's 917 turbo,
yeah,
Porsche, and after Donahue had hurt his leg, Penske, Dan Lugenbuehl, who was Penske's man,
yep,
rang me first, because obviously the year before, 71, I had driven for them in the Ferrari and had proven myself more than a match for Mark in the Ferrari.
Absolutely.
And so they rang me to see if I'd like to drive, because like an idiot, I thought it was probably, they said it'd be for one race probably, and I thought, shit, what should I do? I hate to let the Lola guys down. I spoke to the chief mechanic, Jim Chapman, and he, "Oh mate," he said, "those turbocharged sports cars, they never work, and this car will be great, this car will be wonderful, blah 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 blah." Oh, and of course that fucker Follman goes and wins a bastard championship.
David Hobbs lesson.
Yeah.
Lola T310 or, yeah, Porsche 917 30.
It's gotta be a Lola. It's a no brainer.
Forgotten country. I mean, you know, taking care of old boy Broadley, you know, good on you.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing, David, which I don't know if this was as a result of immense bravery from you and talent, or if Eric's rapid attempts to improve the car played a role, but, you know, you, while you didn't do a ton of races, you were spared many, many years in that car. I mean, you finished fourth at Watkins Glen in it, sixth at Mid-Ohio. You're, you know, usually qualifying fourth or fifth. I mean, that was some meritorious service on your part, for sure.
It was extremely meritorious performance on my part. Only a man of incredible skill and fortitude could achieve those excellent sixth places. Probably one of my best ever drives was the following year. 73, when I drove for Roy Woods, and I drove the M20 that Peter Revson had driven the year before.
Yeah.
Which was the last and the best McLaren. And the first time I turned a wheel in that car, the difference, I thought, fucking hell.
8.1 liter V8, Chevy V8,
no,
good lord.
No wonder these blokes won everything. I mean, the car was so nice to drive.
And that livery as well, that livery which you carried into IndyCar as well, that Carling black label. Oh, beautiful.
Roy tried to be a bit clever and to get online with the Porsches. His engine man, whose name escapes me, he was a very good engine man, but Roy kept saying, make it bigger, and it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and the bigger it got, because the more fragile it got. But anyway, at the Glen, I finished second to Donahue, who by then had the 917-30. And I beat all the other regular 917 turbo.
Wow.
Which was, you know, Peter Gregg, Hurley Haywood, George Volber, the Southerner, you know, with the RC Kohler cars. Jody Scheckter.
Yep.
A whole bunch of them. I beat them all, except Mark. So that was probably one of my finest drives.
Well, a bit of redemption after after 72.
But when you talk about weird cars, I knew there was a really weird one in there I'd forgotten about. I won the Formula 5000 race at Brainerd, or Donnybrook as it was called then, you know, north of Minneapolis.
Yep.
I won that in 1969 when I came over with John Surtees, and we came late. And I won like three or four out of the seven I did, and missed the championship by 1 point to Tony Adamowicz, of course, who had done all the series.
Mr. A to Z.
Which Mr. A to Z, who unfortunately is no longer with us.
Yeah.
But as a result of my win there, I was approached by a guy called Tassivatis.
Yep.
Tassivatis was a Greek, very rich Greek shipping guy, to drive his car. They had an Indy road race up at Donnybrook later on in 1960. I think it was 69. It might have been 70, but I think it was 69. And he had the MG liquid suspension special cars.
Designed by fellow Bay Area man, Joe Huffaker.
Yes. And of course, in the old IndyCar days of yore, these things were all offset.
Yep.
You know, the suspension was different lengths, and the driver didn't sit in the middle, and there were a turbocharged Offenhauser, which had, I mean, the throttle leg was absolutely gruesome.
Get out a sundial to wait for the turbo to spool up.
Anyway, I drove that. That's probably the weirdest car, because obviously, you know, at the end of, you know, the car was designed to turn left. And at the end of the straight at Donnybrook is that long, long right-hander.
Yep.
Slightly banked. And I mean, obviously through there, the car was not particularly happy, because it was definitely going the wrong way for that car. You know. Then you'd come to the next left turn and then go, just go round in a heartbeat. So, I mean, beautiful to get left, but it wasn't very good turning right. Because like most road racing circuits, it's basically a right-hand circuit.
And so,
that's probably the weirdest car.
And what do you, as someone, again, with, you know, immense open wheel and sports car experience, what happens when you walk up and see that car and realize that you are sitting in an offset Indy car with rather bizarre suspension? I'm not saying it didn't work, but, you know.
It wasn't, yeah. Well, it didn't, the normal logistics, you know, stiffer roll bars, stiffer springs, all that. None of that stuff worked. Plus, Tass's mechanic, whose name I just can't remember, but who had the typical IndyCar white coveralls as the uniform, and his toolkit was a hammer, a screwdriver, and an adjustable spanner. he and I did not hit it off well at all. I suppose he thought I was some elitist limey twerp. And he didn't bring anything to the table at all, because he didn't know anything about setting his car up at all. The only thing he'd know anything about would be setting it up for Indy or Phoenix or something like that. He had absolutely no idea about road racing. I mean, none at all. And I didn't have a hell of a lot of idea about setting up this bloody weird offset suspension car for Brainerd, which I'd only been to twice before anyway. So, yeah, this was not a great team. This was definitely a case of the blind leading the blind.
It also sounds like one of those endeavors where you come away realizing that I'm going to set my personal standards a little bit higher in what I choose to accept.
I think I drove that Ferguson four-wheel drive car in a race somewhere too. I'm just trying to think for the life of me where. Because Stirling drove it in a Grand Prix, in a British Grand Prix at Aintree. Then another guy bought it for hill climbs. But that Tassivatis car would probably be the strangest car.
Well,
because of the fact it was also offset to turn left. And at Donnybrook, you're basically turning right all the time.
And that was the British treasure known as David Hobbs, doing his best to not curse excessively about the 1972 Lola T310 Can-Am car. If you have any other cars that come to mind that you know didn't work, wonder why they failed despite having such high expectations, send me a note on Twitter, send me something on the Marshall Pruitt Podcast Facebook page, and I'll be sure to add that to my growing list of desired interviews. All right, I'm Marshall Pruitt. This is Marshall Pruitt Podcast. Thanks for listening.